This is 40ANM in 5, a download of 40ANM LLC, recorded at 1900 Eastern on Sunday, September 8th. I'm Chris Bohm, and welcome back to our weekly selection of tech sector and related global news and policy highlights from the past week. Coming up, Verizon, Vodafone, Microsoft, Nokia, CBS, and Time Warner Cable are each the subject of major corporate announcements making headlines in the past week. October could be the week for immigration reform in the U.S., or maybe not. The U.S. Data Protection Regulation, what can we expect coming out of trilogue negotiations? More revelations emerge regarding U.S. online surveillance efforts, and some U.S. tech companies are pushing back on several fronts. The U.S. Do Not Call Registry encounters a spike in complaints due to robocalling. A controversial new law in Vietnam will penalize citizens for talking about the country or its government in social media. And our weekly roundup of key international calendar items for the coming week. But first, the U.S. jobless rate fell to 7.3% in August from 7.4% in July, as 169,000 jobs were added to public and private payrolls, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates released on Friday morning. Although the figures were in line with economists' expectations, the jobless rate dipped in part because the number of Americans counting themselves as part of the workforce hit a 35-year low in August. Last month's labor force participation rate of 63.2% was the lowest it's been since August 1978. And because of this, an adapted estimate is that only 104,000 jobs were added in August. The figures indicate that a rising number of previously unemployed have simply given up on their job searching or decided, in view of circumstances, to retire rather than continue looking for a new position. In view of this, the report is largely seen as a mixed bag, and although it indicates that the economy is still improving, growth is seen as very sluggish and not likely to increase in pace anytime soon. With the Federal Reserve set to meet this week in Washington, the expectation by many was that the Fed was likely to scale back its bond buying program, an indication that the Fed was satisfied with the continuing pace of economic recovery. Although a scale back of the bond buying strategy is not out of the picture, experts are now divided, given this most recent report, regarding whether or not the Fed will decide this week to begin or wait for additional economic reports later in the year. At 7.3%, the unemployment rate in the U.S. is at its lowest level since December 2008, down from a peak of 10% in October in 2009, and presently the Federal Reserve is engaged in a bond buying injection of capital into the economy equal to roughly $85 billion per month. Eurozone growth has also improved, hitting a 26-month high in August, according to the Market Purchasing Managers Index. This closely watched survey reported in the third week of August that the index of manufacturing and services had risen to 51.7 points from 50.5 in July. A number greater than 50 typically indicates a period of growth. However, market experts cautioned that, despite the uptick in Eurozone market growth, rising unemployment is a continuing issue. Improved sector performance and balance sheets are in part due to job shedding. However, when coupled recently with data that the Eurozone bloc has emerged from recession, Eurozone markets have reacted very positively to the news. Several significant corporate announcements came last week, the first of which was one of the largest announced deals in corporate history. On Monday, September 2nd, Vodafone announced agreement to sell to Verizon its 45% stake in Verizon Wireless for $130 billion, comprised of a mixture of Verizon common stock and cash. The deal would be the third biggest corporate transaction in history, behind Vodafone's 1999 deal to buy Germany's Mannesmann and AOL's purchase of Time Warner in 2000. Vodafone's ownership of just less than half of Verizon Wireless stems from its $61 billion acquisition in 1999 of AirTouch, which later merged its U.S. mobile phone business with that of Bell Atlantic. For Verizon, the deal closes on its long-held desire to consolidate ownership of Verizon Wireless, the largest of the top four U.S. mobile carriers. As of the first quarter of 2013, Strategy Analytics reported that Verizon had approximately 116.75 million subscribers, compared to its next largest rival, AT&T, with 107.25 million. For Vodafone, it expects to return roughly 54 billion British pounds from the deal to its shareholders, in addition to planned investments. The company is also launching a $9 billion fiber and infrastructure investment plan called Project Spring, which includes a commitment to have complete 4G coverage among its top five European markets by 2017. In related news, Microsoft announced that it plans to buy Nokia's devices and services unit for an estimated $7.2 billion. The deal is set to go ahead for roughly $5 billion, with an additional $217 million to be spent on licensing Nokia's considerable patents portfolio. Primary among Microsoft's goals with the transaction is to fulfill its vision of becoming a fully developed handset maker some years after it had evolved the Windows mobile platform into the Windows phone. Under the terms of the deal, Microsoft will acquire 32,000 Nokia employees, including approximately 4,700 in Finland, and 18,300 directly involved in the manufacture, assembly, and production of devices worldwide. Microsoft will absorb Nokia's Smart Devices unit, which develops its Lumia line of smartphones, as well as Nokia's long-term patent licensing agreement with smartphone chipmaker Qualcomm. Although regulators in both the EU and US are likely to require approval of the acquisition, it is set to complete during the fourth quarter of 2014, subject to approval by the shareholders of both companies. And finally, after a month-long period of significant blackouts and public quarreling, US TV network CBS and cable provider Time Warner Cable agreed last week to end their contract dispute over how much Time Warner Cable would pay CBS for programming. A CBS-owned channel, including Showtime Networks, the CBS Sports Network, and the Smithsonian Channel, had been blacked out due to the dispute from roughly 1.1 million of New York's 7.4 million TV households, as well as a third of the households in Los Angeles and 20% of the households in Dallas, three of the five most populous TV markets in the U.S. Several U.S. television personalities, such as CBS's own chat show host David Letterman, had used the dispute to poke fun at the companies for their quarreling. Pressure had been on the companies to resolve their dispute in part because of the upcoming fall football season in the U.S., and the agreement does include retransmission fees that Time Warner Cable will pay to CBS per subscriber, which had long been a key sticking point to the deal. October will be the key month to watch in the U.S. if there is any hope of rescuing immigration reform in Congress in 2013, according to many. October would likely be the month for release of the Gang of Seven compromise reform bill, and the Obama administration has also signaled that it would like to see debate of a measure by then. According to the Brookings Institution, several key labor and manufacturing organizations in the U.S. in favor of immigration reform are optimistic, with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce saying, for instance, that the chances of getting a good bill through Congress this year are perhaps still 50-50. However, key among the possible draws away from attention to immigration reform in the U.S. this fall will be expected debate in the run-up to the mid-October debt ceiling deadline. With debate over Syrian intervention and an expected continuing resolution likely to consume the 9 days that the House will be in session in September, the extension of fiscal-related fights through the 14 legislative days in October could delay immigration reform into the 2014 legislative season. And now for a brief update on European data protection discussions. The European Parliament's Civil Liberties, Justice, and Home Affairs Committee had already delayed its vote on a revised draft data protection regulation until May, and then again until June in the wake of over 3,000 tabled amendments. A number of MEPs at the time were engaged in a particularly intense debate over substance and process with regard to distilling the deluge of amendments, many duplicative, into discrete topics and possible changes. If you add in the May 31st note and draft report of the Irish presidency, mending the proposals and listing eight member states as uncertain whether the regulation is a proper legal form, and you likely sense that the task did not need additional factors for consideration. However, trilogue discussions are continuing within EU institutions with the aim of ironing out agreements, disagreements, and conflicts among the amendments. And the Civil Liberties, Justice, and Home Affairs Committee now plans to have a vote on the draft regulation in October. Key among the remaining issues in the text evolve its territorial scope, Article 3, the nature and quality of consent and when it is given, Article 7, a slate of new definitions, including biometric data, main establishment and personal data breach, and the fate of the so-called right to be forgotten. And even as these issues are debated in trialogue, a new EU data breach regulation, pursuant to the Electronic Communications Data Protection Directive, came into force on October 24th, with the aim of ensuring consistent requirements across the EU for businesses and data subjects. The new rules require immediate notification to data protection supervisory authorities within 24 hours following a controller discovering a breach. And if the breach is likely to adversely impact the personal data of individuals, these are required to be notified as well. As we reported back in July, the Snowden revelations and NSA surveillance measures have been a blow to key European Parliament advocates for business interests in the context of the ongoing review of the European draft regulation. Adweek had reported in mid-August that after 7 weeks of post-Snowden media coverage, the percentage of internet users reporting concerns about their privacy online has jumped from 48 to 67%. But these developments aren't the only ones impacting user interest in privacy and security online. This week, the Pew Research Center's Internet Project reported that in its most recent survey of 792 internet users, 86% of users have taken steps online to remove or mask their digital footprints, ranging from clearing cookies to encrypting email, and 55% of internet users have taken steps to avoid observation by specific people, organizations, or the government. In the press release on the Pew report, Lee Rainey, director of the Internet Project, said that users clearly want the option of being anonymous online and increasingly worry that this is not possible. Seeking to step up to these challenges in public perceptions, Google has moved to encrypt much of the information that flows among its data centers around the world. The initiative, initially approved last year, was accelerated in June as Google struggled to guard its reputation as a reliable steward of user information, amid the controversy about the NSA's PRISM program. According to reports on Thursday in the New York Times, Guardian, and ProPublica, and based on documents provided by Edward Snowden, the NSA seeks to defeat encryption technology by obtaining the keys to decode communications, by using supercomputers to break codes, and by influencing encryption standards to make them more vulnerable to outside attack. According to the Washington Post, security experts have long presumed that the NSA was working to gain access to protected information, but the efforts seem to have been far more extensive than originally understood, and according to the Post, reportedly contributed to the creation of vulnerabilities that other hackers, including foreign governments, could exploit. Encrypting information flowing among the data centers will not make it impossible for intelligence agencies to snoop on individual users of Google services, but security experts agree that the widespread use of encryption makes mass dragnet-style surveillance far more difficult. According to the Post, encryption complicates surveillance efforts, requiring additional resource allocation. Typically, this would be to hack into individual computers and make an end run around any security that they may enable. Several other companies, including Microsoft, Apple, and Facebook, increasingly have begun using encryption on some of their services, though the quality varies by company. Two of these companies, Microsoft and Google, announced on August 30th that they are moving forward with a suit against the U.S. government to win the right to disclose more information about government requests for user data. Each company had filed suit in June, arguing under the First Amendment for the right to publish detailed information on requests. According to Microsoft General Counsel Brad Smith, on six occasions in recent weeks, the parties agreed to extend time to the government to reply to the suit so that the discussions could lead to an agreement acceptable to all. But all of these negotiations failed. As published on August 31st in The Guardian, Smith added that the public deserves and the Constitution guarantees more. To publish information that clearly shows the number of national security demands for user content, such as the text of an email. The Do Not Call registry in the U.S. was begun in 2003, and owing to the public's discontent with unwanted calls, the list added more than 51 million phone numbers in its first year. Once a landline or cell number is listed, it stays on the list until disconnected. And yet, since 2011, the average number of monthly complaints from consumers who have signed up to the list has jumped 63%. Much of the blame for this jump is due to a proliferation of computerized robocalls, according to Lewis Greisman, director for marketing practices to the FCC. Along with being cheap and easy, Robocalls can be the hardest to trace, as calls often come in from foreign calling centers, and scammers are increasingly using VoIP technology to spoof the caller ID of the call to display whatever number they may pick. Whereas call centers used to need significant infrastructure to engage their calling operations, VoIP technology has allowed centers to send thousands of calls simultaneously and at a rate of often less than 1 cent per minute. Since the start of the Do Not Call Registry in 2003, the FTC has filed 106 enforcement cases against companies and individuals and collected roughly $81.9 million in relief and penalties. In Vietnam last week, a controversial new law known as Decree 72 has come into effect, declaring that social media should not be used to share news articles, only personal information. In particular, the publication of sharing of material that opposes the Vietnamese government or harms national security is prohibited. And the new law also requires that foreign internet companies keep their local servers in Vietnam, a practice often referred to as the forced localization of server infrastructure. Many activists, including bloggers, many of them users of the affected services such as Facebook and Twitter, have been convicted of anti-state activity in Vietnam within the past year. And last month, the U.S. Embassy in Hanoi said that it was deeply concerned by the provisions of Decree 72, arguing that fundamental freedoms apply online just as they do offline. Vietnam was added in 2013 to the Reporters Without Borders list of its top five state enemies of the internet list of countries with the worst record globally on internet and press freedom issues. For the week ahead, here is our calendar roundup. Both the U.S. Senate and House will be in session this week, with the Obama administration slated to brief the full House of Representatives on Syria in a closed session on Monday night. In Europe, the European Parliament will be in plenary session in Strasbourg beginning Monday, with a meeting of the Committee on Foreign Affairs slated for 6:30 p.m. Monday, and a meeting of the Civil Liberties, Justice, and Home Affairs Committee slated for 10 a.m. on Thursday. In the UK, communications regulator Ofcom released last week a consultation document on the use of broadcast white space spectrum, with comments due into Ofcom by the 15th of November. And Ofcom also released last week its online guidance to consumers on traffic management. On Wednesday, September 3rd, the European Institute, as part of its European Affairs magazine, released an article by Chris Bohm entitled U.S.-EU Privacy Policy Relations Post-Snowden, Keep Calm and Carry On Over a Perilous Road. The article is available online at europeaninstitute.org/European Affairs or at 40a-m.com. You have been listening to 40ANM in 5, a production of 40ANM LLC. For more information, visit 40a-m.com. All stories for this week's podcast were reported by at least two online or print news sources or taken directly from relevant releases, with the exception of specific reporting highlighted from the Brookings Institution, New York Times, The Washington Post, The Guardian, and ProPublica. Stories we are working on for you for next week include public policy and business model challenges for big data-related services and applications, and the road ahead for cybersecurity strategy and best practices internationally. Thank you for joining us today in our return week for 40ANM in 5 podcasts. We will be back with you on Monday, September 16th. Until then, make this week and every week one to remember. And bye for now.